Right, ladies and gentlemen.
Have you seen the government's infrastructure plan over the next...
No, I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, but I presume it's about ongoing investment in areas like transport, ultra-fast broadband, and schools and other such infrastructure. That's pretty much building on what...
Public-private partnerships, clearly they're going to become very much part of this.
Well, there are areas where that will be justifiable, and there are areas where it won't make sense at all. You know, we're always prepared to look at something in the transport area, but having public-private partnerships in education doesn't seem to make much sense, frankly.
The free trade agreement being negotiated with India, some sensitivity on the Indian side about labour standards and child labour issues. It appears that that won't be a feature of the free trade agreement. Should it be?
Labour, negotiated trade and labour and trade and environment agreements in both the China FTA and the Southeast Asian one, they are desirable to have. We shouldn't be naive to think, however, that we can turn around a major social problem such as child labour in India through a free trade agreement with New Zealand.
But it should be in there.
I think there should be reference to trade and labour, and it's about best practice, it's about international standards, and it's about opportunities for cooperation and discussion, as it was with China.
So would you be worried if it wasn't in there?
I think we should push for it to be in there. If a country like China and if the ASEAN countries are prepared to agree with it, then it's not breaking new ground to have it in the trade agreement with India.
What resistance did you find from China? I mean, you did much of the negotiation.
Yeah, look, it's not something that they immediately wanted to do. Countries like and in ASEAN, countries like Indonesia and Malaysia were reluctant, but they came to see the point of view and that this could be helpful in terms of dealing with the issues as they arose. It's about upholding international standards, and that's what we want to see.
What concern are you, Mr. Goff, about the SAS firefight last week in Kabul? Does it? Did it show as well that perhaps the Afghani forces aren't up to any handover?
Well, it showed potentially a lack of preparedness on the part of the Afghan special unit there. I'm sure the SAS behaved efficiently and professionally. There's a question as to whether they were injured by fire from the other side or from friendly fire. That's an answer I can't give. But the question has been raised, and I would imagine that the government would want to clarify
that.
Is
it still your position that we shouldn't be there, the SAS shouldn't be there?
Our position since 2005 was not to put the SAS back into Afghanistan, and that's been a consistent position. It's not related to this particular event.
But don't you think it shows that they are actually needed there potentially longer, not shorter in duration?
Well, we've now been in Afghanistan for 10 years. That's considerably longer than we were involved with the Second World War. It's time for an exit strategy.
If you were Prime Minister and the Americans and NATO would ever asked you to stay on or asked you for a fresh commitment, would you do it?
We're prepared to keep the provincial reconstruction team in Afghanistan. I've said that many times. But no, the SAS would come out. Other countries are now withdrawing. Canada will be withdrawing all of their troops in the next couple of months.
Does the firefight effect show that they're not really there in a mentoring role at all, that they're there to do the nitty-gritty work?
Well, they might be there in a mentoring role, but when you're caught up in a situation like that and you have to preserve your own life and protect civilians, inevitably you're going to be drawn into that conflict.
But do you think it makes a mockery of that mentoring role? I mean, it looks like they're leading with the front.
I think it's more than a mentoring role in a situation like that. In order to protect themselves and perhaps to protect civilians, they will be drawn into the fight. That's not the reason why I believe the SAS should be withdrawn. That's been a consistent position since 2005.
Yeah, if they hadn't been there, hundreds of guests might have actually been killed. Is that not a reason for keeping them there?
Well, you could argue that we should have troops in more than 30 or 40 countries on that basis, that civilian lives are being lost, they're being lost every day of the year in the Congo. But that's not a reason why we send New Zealand troops to that country.
Have you managed to have a look at the Y262 report yet, and how significant do you think that is?
I read through the first 500 pages last night, and I'll probably complete it tonight. No, the short answer is I haven't had a chance to look at it. It's 20 years in the making. It's 1,000 pages long. It deserves serious consideration. It's not about ownership. It's about proposals for guardianship. And we need to look at that, I think, very carefully. And we need to look at how Māori can be involved in decisions that intimately affect their own culture. But we shouldn't come to any rapid decision on that. We should consider it carefully first.
One of the proposals in there was to note that the Māori health is in something of a crisis situation, and that traditional Māori healing practices should be incorporated within the health system.
Well, traditional healing practices exist right across the community and in a range of different communities. For example, the Chinese community. Maori health is an issue. The life expectancy and the level of good health is much lower than the wider community. We need to look at all aspects of that: nutrition, exercise, immunisation, a whole range of factors.
Do you have a view on the Human Rights Commission's bill for equal pay for men and women?
Well, I think it's obvious that people doing the same job should get the same pay rate. We've had legislation for more than 50 years in that respect in the public sector. We still haven't achieved the reality of it. I think there is good reason to have some transparency around it. I think you can overcome privacy considerations, but without transparency, we'll never turn principle into reality.
So you'd like to see that
become
law?
I'd like to see that go into Parliament. Let's have a look at it. Let's look at how it can be best done and how we can safeguard issues such as privacy.
And Councillor Violante's bill to achieve the same?
We'll support that into Parliament and to the Select Committee.
Isn't it a bit of contradictory to filibust Members' Day when that's a prime member's bill? That's a bit of a low day with that.
We've got an opposition to a bill that's being promoted by ACT, and we'll fight that one tooth and nail. Sooner or later it'll go through and there'll be the chance to look at other legislation. Okay? Thank you very much.